Hello, everyone. I'm Janine.
And Stephanie.
And welcome to the Course of Course episode 32. It's been quite a week or two for us. We've been off mic for a little bit.
Yes, we have. And we're going to be traveling pretty soon.
We are going to be traveling. Good segue. In 2 weeks, we're going to go to the Gary Renard talk.
With Cindy Renard
down in La Jolla, which is basically Greater San Diego. And we're going to enjoy a day with them. And the special plus to that is we are going to finally meet Mike Lemieux in person.
Yay! Yay for Giddy Up Mike.
The author of Dude, Where's My Jesus Fish. So we're both very excited about that. And we're hoping to get him as a special guest on our podcast in episode 33. So look forward to that.
Yes. We're going to bring all the equipment down and set it up. And hopefully it will all work. And we'll pass
sure
the mics around.
And a fun time will be had by all.
Yes.
So let's talk about things that have been going on in the Janine and Stephanie life. I've often talked about work issues. I've been through a transition because I have a new role at work, which is good. I mean, change is always good, but it's also unsettling as well. And I've been training my replacement, essentially. So it's kind of like working with all that feelings of, I really miss my old team and I miss my old role. And understanding that in order for all of us to move forward, I have to be as much as service as I possibly can. Not just to my replacement, but to everybody at work. And kind of moving into that space of getting away from the ego part of it and getting back into we're all together, we're all God. Yeah. It's been really helpful when I've had moments, and I think we all experience this in a work environment, where someone might ping you or ping your ego or something's happening. It's been really helpful to have my iPad with me, which is the primary vehicle I use to read the course text or a lot of the Gary Renard books or Dude, Where's My Jesus Fish. So it does help when I'm in a conference call and somebody's really, you know, hitting my buttons to pull that up. And while I'm on a conference call, I'm actually reading the course. And we were talking earlier about you were doing the same thing.
Yeah, I wasn't being confronted, thank goodness, in the moment, but it was a meeting and they were going on about stuff that I didn't necessarily need to be fully focused on. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to sit here and on the couch and read my lesson for today.
It's really nice to be able to, I mean, I love the technology revolution that we don't have to carry around these big hardback books. And now we can just pull up our electronic device and read, you know, a quote or two or a chapter at any moment of our day.
Yeah, to help represent us.
Represent.
To the truth.
I really like that word, represent. It's probably not a legit word, but I think we should make it a word. Represent.
I like to make up words.
Let's just do that. Mm-hmm. You know why? Because it's our dream.
That's true.
And we can create it however we want.
Mm-hmm.
I do think it's interesting when I hear people, we're basically in a multicultural world these days, right? It's not like the very homogenous kind of areas that we grew up in. I know growing up in Ohio, everybody looked the same, addressed the same, and all that kind of stuff. Now it's a whole different thing. So you hear different accents and different pronunciations, and it always bugged me when somebody would correct someone with their pronunciation. It's like, why are you doing that? That's just their local flavor. That's their little spice to the language. And if they choose to put emphasis on one syllable and not the other, I think it's amazing that they're like, well, I'm going to do it this way. I don't like the cookie cutter kind of aspect of everybody has to always be the same.
I agree.
It's a nice and refreshing change culturally.
Some flair.
But I can see kind of our parents' generation are probably recoiling from it. My father still is very traditional in his ways, and you know, when he talks to me, he's always asking me, well, when are you going to get married? Because to him that's my goal, what my life path should be. And for me, it's like, well, I think I'm just lucky that I'm not. We all have choices, and they're not always going to be conventional.
As you've said, the script is written. So
the script is written. That's also an interesting concept, because there are times that I'm kind of being confronted and I have to always stop and say, look, it's okay. Just find the God space here and just move on. Because if you get too stuck in it, then you don't remember that the script is already written. Yes, we have some free will, quote unquote, and that free will is always remembering to forgive and move on. But that's not always easy to grasp when you're in the moment. I find that other human beings are amazing teachers for me, but not always in a pleasant way. I have said before, I think I'm a better manager at work because I've been around really bad ones. That being around bad ones have actually been kind of helpful to me, because it provides that contrast for me to say, well, that's not the path I choose. I choose to go to another path. So it's nice having contrast in my life, but it's not always pleasant.
I think in the text it talked about comparisons is how they Jesus teaches, mm-hmm. which is probably the same as contrast. So we can choose.
I don't know if we talked about this before. Like, we all have these other lifetimes that are spinning out. Like, Janine and Stephanie have these other things that are happening. And what other lifetimes did Jesus have before he was Jesus?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, who was he before that? I want to ask him. Like, dude, come on.
Well, at some point we'll be in that oneness and we'll know it all, whatever it is we desire to know.
Mm-hmm.
Like in the Billy book, when he went through spending time with all his different visions, I
you
guess.
Know, it's weird because we have always said, always, that's the wrong word, but we have often said that we kind of don't want to do this again. It'd be great if this is our last lifetime, mm-hmm. and wouldn't it be fantastic? And even if we have one more, it's not optimal, but it's better than the opposite, right? I'm just somebody who just really wants to have this be the end one. Every day I'm confronted with, well, I will drive to work and have these thoughts, these ego-based, not so great thoughts about other people. And I have to keep stopping myself and say, well, you're not going to be, you know, this isn't going to be the end thinking this way.
What if you listen to the text on the way in?
I do listen to the text.
Immortal reality.
As we've both listened to them so many times, right?
I know, but sometimes, I still drill them in.
Well, I do too, but there are times when just listening to it's not going to stop my inner voice.
Yeah.
Like, I have to have like stronger will than that.
Okay.
And although we have this deep crush with the guy who is the narrator of the course audio,
yeah.
I still want to find out who that is. Maybe when we go down to San Diego in a couple of weeks, we can ask Gary and see if he knows.
I'm pretty sure it's in here. I think I found it once.
You did?
I believe I did. We just have to go to the audiobook and like the about or something.
Is that gent still on earth?
That part I don't know. There he is, the Holy Spirit. How did I find that? I don't know. I'll find it some other time, I guess.
Wouldn't that be great if we can have him as a guest on our podcast?
That'd be fun.
That would be like so freaky. He'd be like talking like the voice of the course, you know? I wonder if any of our other listeners are listening to the audio and understand what we're talking about.
When I say the old man in the car.
But he's not really the old. Do you think he's an old man?
Well, he's probably mature in his 60s, I'd say, which is certainly not old. But the flavor of the voice is like a grandpa.
Well, it definitely feels
commanding.
Very, yeah. Like somebody who's been around for a while. Who knows
to be
their
Jesus.
Stuff. Mm-hmm. That's true. So he's like basically the voice of Jesus on earth.
Yeah.
Talking through the course. Yeah, I can see that. There's something about that voice that it could just be because we've heard it so many times, but it mm-hmm. does. It feels like he's our friend.
Authoritative.
Yeah.
Confident. Loving.
Yeah, I do find safety
mm-hmm.
in his voice,
mm-hmm.
which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But we still want to get the Gary Renard second and third books on audio.
Yes, we do.
Wouldn't it be great if somehow we could just say, hey, Gary, we have the equipment. You just want to talk into the mic? Maybe you could just read it.
Yeah, him and Cindy.
Yeah.
Well, we'd need three people. So we have to include Jean, because I can't imagine.
Yeah, that's true.
Arton not being Jean.
Yeah, that's very true.
And he's got recording equipment, too, so.
That's true.
Next time they're there, Cindy can play Persa, and we'll just rock it out in Florida.
Which is like the opposite of who they are in the next lifetime.
It
because
is.
Because she's Arton, and yeah.
That's pretty funny.
It's still kind of trippy thinking in 100 years, these lifetimes that we've heard about. I just wonder if we're going to be on the earth at the same time and be like, oh, I kind of remember this story.
Well, if we have one more left, that's when we're going to come through with the same group.
I think the Persa story has helped me so much, the slow burn Persa story,
mm-hmm.
in my daily life. I can't tell you how many times I refer back to it because I always think to myself, well, look what Persa had to go through. I can do this. I can do this. It's kind of like my ship in the storm, my oasis in the desert.
It is nice to have examples that we can
relate
to and learn from.
Absolutely huge. Because sometimes when I read the course, I think it's fantastic, but I also don't quite get how I'm always supposed to apply that in real life. So it's nice to hear these real life stories that Persa and Arton experienced and go, oh, right. Because we can't always be 100% into Jesus' mind all the time. It'd be great if we were. It doesn't always work for me.
Yeah, it's impossible.
It's impossible.
Practically, unless we've become transformed.
Like, I would really love it if I did have to come back again, that I could be like those two and live a part of the physical life as somebody who's been enlightened. It just seems mm-hmm. like such a trip to be down here in body and be able to like...
So then my question is if you are in a body, do you become enlightened while you're in this form?
Like, well, that's what they said, that Persa was enlightened before, like a couple years before she passed.
I know, but do you have to be in a body is my question. Like, could I just die in this lifetime and transcend without becoming enlightened in this life?
Wasn't Billy Fingers that way?
Yep, I'd say so.
So, yeah, I'm sure you can. It just, with everything, I just would like it if there was a very simple Pictionary type of book that says, this is what you need to do, Janine. You need to do step one and step two and step three. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of great books out there. Alex Marchand's book does a really great job of kind of like explaining it all, right? Mm-hmm. But it would just be nice if we had step-by-step instructions. That's just a lazy part of me.
On how to transform. It's called the workbook.
Well, I know that, but the workbook also, it doesn't say this is what you need to do, step one, step two. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of mind training, which is fantastic.
Undoing the mind.
Right. I would love to find out, I don't know, like a survey or something of the people who have completed the workbook once, twice, three times. Mm-hmm. And how much their life has changed because of it.
I mean, how could life not change? I think that when DU came out and people could get a better understanding of what this all is, it would make the workbook become clearer for those people. Now, I guess there's a whole faction of course people out there who don't want to read Gary's books, which is, you know, whatever.
Which is mind-blowing, frankly.
We can just turn that illusion over right now and just know it's just part of the separation. Mm-hmm. The book coming through was what made it make sense to us.
That was kind of like the pivotal moment for both of us.
Yep.
Because we were able to like go, oh, okay, now I get the course, and it sent us down that path.
But it still takes work. Like, I still have to do the workbook to undo
the mind. Right, and we both know that, you know, we've had other people read the book, and although they're like, oh, okay, it hasn't ignited their interest enough to, like, go down the course path. Even though the book was kind of mind-blowing for both of us, it goes back to when you're ready, it will make sense. So I have a couple friends and family members who have been exposed to the book, and they haven't quite had the same reaction that we did. Our reaction was almost immediate after reading it. I think we were just like, what's next? Let's do this. And not everybody has that. And when we first were exposed to the course in the 90s, it wasn't there for us. Although we were kind of, I don't know, chipped around the surface with Marianne Williamson, we didn't really get this until the Gary book came out. And not when the Gary book came out, it was only a few years ago that we read it.
Like 10 years after
it came out. Yeah, yeah. So we were just saying how amazing it would be if we were in our 20s and read that. Our lives would be so different, maybe.
I think so, because our point of view would be different.
Yeah.
And again, that would have been in the design. Well, I wanted to talk about a guy named Tara Singh. He is a teacher, author, poet, humanitarian, and he was born in India. And he had a lot of interesting experiences, but at some point, he took a 3-year period of silence, and he did a retreat in early 70s in California. When he came out, he found A Course in Miracles, and he became a close friend with Helen. And from that moment on, his whole point of the world was about the Course. And even for 1 year, from Easter of 83 to Easter of 84, they conducted a 1-year non-commercial retreat, which was a serious study of A Course in Miracles. It's an unprecedented, in-depth exploration of the Course, and he didn't charge tuition, which was pretty cool. But I just ran into this flyer that was in my Blue Book, which, like you, I'm more of an iPad person. But I had pulled it out for some reason, I guess because I was cleaning my apartment. And I ran across this flyer from 1992 that was stuffed in the pages. And he talks about silence and service, the song of life. And this man is named Tara Singh. And he was talking about what's the purpose of life. And the thing that I giggled about and have been kind of latched onto was making space in our brain for the light of the mind. And by having that light, God can help us silence the mind. So even though he's using the word brain, I just made it be, you know, mind and the ego. And in the space of silence, the light of God can come through, and that we have a busy day and night. There's not enough space for the light to make contact. And getting our own lives in order, which I thought was really good. I don't know, this whole little poem or excerpt that he had written really spoke to me.
When you talked to me about Tara Singh, right?
Mm-hmm.
I went and did kind of a Yahoo Google search. I was really interested in this gentleman. I was also kind of astonished that we hadn't heard from him before. We hadn't heard the name before.
For being committed to the course and sharing it with thousands of people for 30 years.
Yeah, I love the fact that he read it in generation. He's like, this is it. Yeah. Which is fantastic.
It made sense to him.
Right.
He didn't have to wait for DU.
He's like, I'll just do this now. Well, I had talked before about a friend of mine at work who had done the Course in Miracles and gone to discussion groups and that kind of stuff. So it's nice meeting with people to go, oh, okay, now we have kind of a common lexicon, a common language that we can talk about, which is so lovely when we go and, you know, experience the Gary Renard, Cindy Renard talks and any conferences, because we're now around like-minded people, which is always lovely.
There was one other thing on Tara Singh, which was about the end of the situation. And he was talking here, as long as one is ruled by externals, he's in a situation. One cannot listen to the truth as long as the situation is controlling him. It is our unwillingness to change. He goes on about, you know, becoming free of the situation.
I like that he's calling it the situation.
Yeah.
That's kind of awesome.
It's kind of, so I want to find more of his books because I like the way he uses mm-hmm. the language.
Yes.
Making space in the brain and that we have these situations. So that's what I wanted to share about that. If our listeners have heard of him and want to recommend a book to us, that would be
Tara
great.
Yeah, Tara Singh.
They said that one, they list a few, but the one that got my attention was Moments Outside of Time. Wonder what he has to say about
that. I love that whole thing because we've heard in the text and also in the Gary books about being outside of time and space.
Mm-hmm.
And also in the Billy Fingers book, it talked about that. It's like, I would love to experience that and know what that feels like to be outside of time and space.
Which I'm sure we do, maybe when we sleep or when in between lives and we're back up there reforming.
You know, I love sleep time. I love dreaming. It's such a blessing when you wake up and you remember the dream, because sometimes we don't. It just happens when we wake up and it's gone. It's like that whole concept of a dream inside of a dream, because we're dreaming in our wake time. Like mm-hmm. in the bigger picture. Mm-hmm. So now we're dreaming in our wake time while we're dreaming.
Mm-hmm.
Blows me away. It's like one of those Russian dolls where there's a doll inside a doll inside a doll. Kachina dolls or mm-hmm. whatever those are called. Really amazing.
Yeah, I remember those. It was Russia, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was Russian dolls. Mm. I do want to talk about kind of real world application of this. So I was having a rough time the past week. Not a rough time. That's over traumatizing it. But, you know, I'm moving to a different role and I kind of miss my old team and, you know, I was experiencing this.
Transition.
Yeah, it's transition, right? It's one of those things that isn't always pleasant. So I phoned a friend of mine, really just to vent, honestly, because sometimes when you're upset, you just want to get it out. What I was hearing back was more like, what are you afraid of? It was very pop psychology based. And I remember feeling immediately shutting down. I just shut down. It's like, okay, well, I'll talk to you later. The reality is all I wanted to do was talk. I didn't want to hear anything coming back at me because, frankly, it wasn't something I wasn't afraid of. It was just I was processing the feelings, mm-hmm. right? So again, in my other example of I became a better manager when I saw the contrast in people who weren't very good managers. In this experience, I feel blessed by the person I was on the phone with because it made me realize if that happens to me again, if she or anyone else calls me, just remember, just listen and be supportive and be like, okay, well, let me know if I can do anything to help you. You know, sometimes we learn from all the stuff that goes around, and if we're smart, we can take it in and go, okay, how can I transform this? It doesn't always work that way.
Yeah, I think the natural way the ego operates is we want to help people. We want to fix them.
Yes.
You know, we want to be problem solvers.
Right.
We want to help you figure it out so you're not in pain.
But I don't know if any of the listeners experience this, but sometimes the people who are saying that are the ones that have the most messed up lives. But you know what I mean? But let me just fix you because I can't bother to like address my own stuff. I find that comical, entertaining, one might say. But like I said, the work environment is a very good one in kind of helping get past the ego stuff, because it's all ego-based. Anything hierarchical has this massive ego stuff attached to it. Like, I'm higher on the hierarchy than you are, so I'm more important, so I can tell you things and you have to do them. Fascinating. Really fascinating being within that structure. And some of these older cultures, I know in the Indian culture and stuff, they still have the concept of castes. We have them here in the United States, but it's more like middle class and upper middle class. We still do it. We have to categorize everybody because our ego has to feel like they're above the lower class.
And just more separation.
Oh, it's all about separation. It really is. Even when you're in a relationship, a romantic relationship, it's still like you see these people who've been together for a long time pick at each other. And it's like these are people who you know, are married and they love each other, quote unquote, but they're still kind of going at each other.
I would never want to live in that kind of situation.
It's got to be really harsh, I think. The whole concept of marriage, to me, just feels very stifling.
Like prison, if it's not going well.
In a way, but it's weird. It's like you're a prisoner of the jail that you built the bars for. Mm-hmm. And you can walk out anytime you want. But it's kind of like, why would people voluntarily put themselves in this jail and feel like they can't get out of the jail?
Society expects people to get married and have kids.
Ask my dad. He would tell you that.
Exactly.
It is strange, though. I know at work, nobody really asks me much about my personal life because, one, I don't talk about it. It's a weird thing. I just feel like it's my own deal. And everybody talks about, you know, their children and their spouses. And I can't participate in that conversation.
Do they include you? Do you get engaged or do you just kind
of... I engage when they invite me. Mm-hmm. You know, if they want to voluntarily talk about their husband or wife or their kid, what their kids did and all that kind of stuff on the weekend. I'm like, oh, that's great. And I'll engage with that. But I don't put it out there. Someone may ask me how was my weekend? And I always say, oh, it was great. And that's pretty much it. I'm not the biggest sharer. I will admit that.
No details.
But the reality is, it's not like my life is all that fascinating anyway. I was going to say I'm not really climbing mountains, but actually last week I did. So, legitimately. It's a small mountain.
The nice ocean view.
Yeah, with a nice ocean view, which is the way it should be.
So, what is the last judgment? It's Christ's second coming gives the Son of God the gift to hear the voice for God that proclaims what is false is false and what is true is never changed. In the audio, I heard them talking about God giving us the gift of, you know, coming home to heaven. And right. So I just want to see the gift in my brother and the gift in me.
Well, it's
and
like that the whole recognition thing. That we're all God anyway.
Yeah.
And that is the challenge for me, because I will look at somebody who's not being very kind to me. And it takes a lot for me to be like, you are Christ, pure and innocent. All is forgiven and released. It isn't that easy for me to remember in that moment, because all I want to do is, like, you know, rip their eyes out.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, that's probably not the most loving way to see that person. I'm guessing.
Yeah, rip my own eyes out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the thing. It's like everything you think about them is really what you think about you. And that's a tough thing for my ego to handle. It's like, well, I don't hate myself, but you kind of do if you're kind of throwing barbs at somebody else. So it's like, ugh.
I had something weird happen last night where my neighbors were gone and their dog started barking and someone was screaming they were going to call the police. So I called them and they said, go into our apartment and shut them down, you know, go play with them. We'll be home soon. And when I came into the apartment, the sliding glass door was wide open. There was no screen. And I get nervous because people have already robbed their apartment before. And anyone could be lurking around, and that could have been why the dogs were barking. You know, someone could have broken in. So I was cautious about going into the apartment. And once I got all the lights on and the dogs out, I opened the door for them to go pee, another door, and all the lights went out in the apartment. And my adrenaline shot through the roof, like, oh my God, what is going on here?
What do you mean all the lights went off?
All the lights to the apartment went out. I had no idea why, except that it was, you know, 95 yesterday.
Okay,
and I thought,
so it might have been just electrical.
Maybe at 8 o'clock, you know, yeah, or 9 o'clock, whatever time it was. And I just kept talking to the dogs. Like, mm-hmm. Even though the adrenaline shot through me and the fear of, you know, again, my mind goes getting jumped and raped and dragged off into a ditch.
Mm-hmm. I like that you always have these uplifting thoughts.
Yeah, yeah. That I just felt some kind of peace, even though the sharp was there. Mm-hmm. There was a little bit more peace this time in my fear of there is nothing wrong here. There's nothing happening. Just keep going. Like, everything's fine. And I eventually got out of the apartment. I left my phone. I just went back to my own apartment and waited for them to get home. And I'm like, I don't know what happened.
Well, when did the lights go back on?
Once they got home and reset the circuit breaker.
Okay.
But my lights were on. Mm. So that's, it also kind of freaked me out then too, because I was like, why did only their lights go out? So I didn't know if someone was in the apartment or not. And it was kind of a fearful thing.
Mm-hmm. But you took care of the dogs and they stopped barking?
Yeah, they stopped barking.
That is pretty weird that the screen door was open. And did you look in every room?
No.
Oh.
Are you kidding me? No way.
Were you saying, hey, whoever's in here, I'm just checking out the dogs?
No, like I opened the door and I did all my own little safety tricks that I mm-hmm. do just mm-hmm. to give my mind some ease. But I had a weird call come in the other day from an old shelter garden that I used to work at that we used to talk about mentally ill patient that had attacked me, Donnie.
Right. Yeah.
And they asked me to come back to help them. So I went and visited and learned that he'd been to a treatment center in Florida and he was back and that I might run into him, but he's not living there anymore. And he's definitely not living in the garden.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I'm going to go back there.
Oh, good for you.
And I kind of have a feeling that the universe will orchestrate me seeing him and maybe getting a completion on some level or something, because even though he was a big lesson for me, I still was working through, you know, the early workbook lessons and imagining him being a teacher for me and not to be afraid.
Fear is an interesting thing. It's almost like it's part of our DNA to be afraid of something. But the reality is there's really not a threat unless we invite it in, but it's hard to remember that as well.
Well, and it's because it's scripted, we have invited it in. Like, there are people who do get jumped or whatever, or stabbed by crazy people.
Yeah, we were talking about different fears for both of us, and I don't really have that one particularly, but I have other ones that you don't, and you have things that I don't. Yeah. It's just fascinating what's really lurking in our story.
And that ego consciousness that just tries to keep us continually splintered and fractured and in a state of fear so we don't know love and truth and light.
Well, I'm going to talk about a different kind of fear, and that's the presidential candidates in the United States. I think that whole thing is fascinating. There was a debate that occurred, I think it was last week, and it was the Republican candidates in this particular venue. And I found it, I laughed out loud a couple times because I thought it was delightful in its humor, unintentional completely, because I found that we were still looking at a stage of 10 men, one might say angry white men.
And the earlier one, I think, had 8, but only one was a female.
Yeah, so there was like a lower tier, I guess.
Out of 20 people, one was a female.
Right, and it was based on polls, I think.
I think one was African. And maybe a couple were Latino, and the rest are all old white men.
Yeah, so we're still looking at a demographic, at least on the Republican side, that I don't think is all that reflective of the populace in the country anymore. But what I thought was really interesting was Donald Trump is leading in the polls, at least at the time that we're recording this podcast. I'm sure that could change, in Iowa and New Hampshire. And those are the two states that have the early primaries. Mm. But what I thought was interesting was the language and their belief system toward Middle America and how they believed Middle America seem to be them, kind of privileged, older white people. And it really was like, that's not America anymore. That may have been America 20 years ago, but you can't just ignore the Hispanic population or any of the other areas that are no longer, honestly, minorities. I think white America is becoming the minority.
They are.
in certain
they own it
states,
still.
They certainly are. But I think in some of the more traditional kind of Republican strongholds, I know in Ohio, where I'm from, it's still pretty white. But there's these other populations are really quickly kind of overtaking certain demographics. But what I thought was really fascinating to me was it was this still the same old dialogue from the same old people saying the same old things. And I thought, we're getting to the point now where it's the tipping point where we're going to start seeing all of those kind of angry white men go away. I think they've aged out. I think we've gotten to the point where they're aging out. I don't know if we're going to see that in this next upcoming election, but I think I think they're pretty much done, at least in this country.
I'd say within the next 10 years, because they're all going to die.
I know that maybe this is just my view, but I believe that people should have affordable health care. And I don't understand why there is issues with that. Of course, everybody should have health care. It just sounds ridiculous.
It's a no-brainer.
Yeah. Like, come on. Are you kidding me? And people should have the ability to lean back on the government that they're paying taxes into for help at any given time.
And the fact that companies don't pay taxes and can ship jobs overseas. And, you know, I mean, it's just the whole thing's just set up for those people to keep making money.
Well, I've said this before, I don't like this concept of this arbitrary line in the sand with immigration. And if you're born on the wrong side of the line, then, you know, you may be doomed to poverty for the rest of your life. I get that it's important that we have some sort of restrictions around immigration, but I don't think that we should basically say, well, this particular population, I'm just going to use Mexico as an example, we don't want them in, but we're okay with Canada. So what's really going on here?
Well, it's they like, think that they're taking the jobs.
Right, but we're okay with Canadians because they look and sort of talk like us, as opposed to Mexicans who don't.
Well, Canadians can't get jobs here, like unless they're
green
card.
Well, I know, but
card,
I'm just saying, you know? I mean, the reality is from an immigration perspective, we really get a lot of Hispanic Mexicans who cross the border, completely understandable. If I were them, I'd be doing the exact same thing.
Definitely.
We have a moral
obligation?
Kind of, yeah, to take care of human beings, regardless of these ridiculous lines and sands.
That's what the United States is all about, a melting pot.
Well, and that's the irony, right?
Yeah.
It's like we talk about how we're a melting pot, but yet we don't want certain people in here. And I just think what I was laughing at in the debate was some of the things that Donald Trump was saying was just so ridiculous. It's like normal, rational human beings don't say these things, especially if you're trying to be the leader of the free world. You can't say, well, we don't want those guys in there because they're not like us. Well, no. We're moving. This generation, the generations that are coming up now, I think are far more tolerant. I think we see that with gay rights and all that kind of stuff. The kind of discussion that Donald Trump represents, just I don't think it's going to hold water anymore.
I don't think he'll be the president.
No.
You know, I don't think he'll pick
out
at some
point.
It's
so early days, but I do find it amusing that he seems to be leading in the polls now, considering the divisive language he uses.
He's a character.
He is a character. That's true. And he kind of is hitting on, I don't know, some of the Achilles heel of a few people who are angry and they want somebody to like be the voice of their frustration. But that can only last so long.
Mm-hmm.
Because anger eventually dissipates. It's really the people who come off as more uniting. I remember when Obama was running, well, now almost 6 years ago or whatever that was, and he had a very, we can do this, you know, we can work together. It was very uniting in his speeches. I don't really hear that with Donald Trump. I hear the opposite.
Yeah, I still think it's way too early to be talking about all this stuff. Like, I wish that they would just do it 6 months or 3 months before, you know?
And we were talking about how in Gary Renard's third book, he talked about, you know, there's going to be a candidate in the United States who's going to be president that's going to be a very spiritual one. And so we're just looking forward to that.
Yeah, to have someone from a course point of view would be a miracle.
That would transform so much on the world stage, I think. I wonder if we're still going to be Janine and Stephanie when that happens, you know? Or if we're going to be moving on, doing other things, other adventures. We were talking about, you know, when people pass on, and how we as a culture have this thing where like, oh, that's so sad. Is it really sad? I mean, they're just waking up from their dream and being like, oh, thank goodness. That was a terrible dream I just had. But we think in this dream, oh my gosh, it's so sad that they left. It's like it's like the biggest gift they could ever get. It'll be interesting once we get to a point as kind of a culture where we celebrate their passing, as opposed to always going to that negative, oh, and crying and staring at a coffin. The whole thing is just ridiculous.
We had that for my grandmother when she died. We had a grandma's moving on party.
Yeah, and that's
we celebrated it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think in the news recently, Bobby Christina Brown, who's the daughter of Whitney Houston, passed away. And like all this sadness and, oh, you know, it's like, oh, come on. How lucky is she? She was only 22. She's like, I'm done. I can go back now. You know, and we're still like, you know, a little older, still down here in this messed up dream of ours.
I just recently got my apartment painted.
Oh, that's right.
So I'm now more in a light filled space instead of my log cabin feel. And I also got my carpets cleaned and I got my place cleaned. So I have clean windows and it feels transformative to be in a clean, sparkly, feels kind of new. I had to pack a lot of stuff, so I don't have a lot of stuff out yet. Like, I'm kind of thinking, like, do I really want to put that picture back? Just because the picture was there before doesn't mean it needs to go back.
That's true.
And just try and keep things really simple.
It is good to kind of move around the energy and get it kind of cleared up. It does feel good with that. I also felt like when things in my external life feel a little out of control, whether it's work or whatever, I tend to get very anal retentive about neatness. It's like the one thing I can control, you know?
Cleaning is my way of burning off energy.
Burning off like tension and anxiety and stuff like that.
Definitely.
Yeah, for sure.
When I was in New York a couple years ago and the conversation with the person I thought I was in love with didn't go the way I thought it was going to go.
Right.
I cleaned from top to bottom the apartment of the house I was staying in.
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it?
It's like, you guys go out, I'm going to stay home and clean.
You know, with love relationships, we always want them to be a certain way. But thank heaven for unanswered prayers. Seriously.
Oh, I'm so glad I'm still here. Yes.
It's fascinating. Like when you look back and go, oh my gosh, I'm so grateful that that happened the way it did. But when you're in that moment, it's hard to see it.
I would have been so busy just commuting that I don't know that I would have found the course.
I agree. I think that some of these special relationships, not holy ones, really are distracting. They truly are distracting. And had I taken the many roads that I thought for sure were the ones I wanted, mm-hmm. I wouldn't be who I am today, thankfully, I guess.
Yeah, we learn a little bit from each one.
We do.
But I think give it all.
I feel like I'm really getting the point of special relationships. Like I've really done that one.
They're just distractions.
Yeah.
They're prisons.
Which is why, you know, I talked to you about a friend who is going through this special relationship, and watching her go through it from the outside and seeing it all, I know that she probably can't see it while she's in it. And we had talked before about this, that, you know, it's kind of hard watching that.
Yeah, because again, our natural instinct is we want them out of pain. So we want to fix them and help them and make right. suggestions. And mm-hmm. and I learned from my mom early on to not do that. But I see myself doing that a lot. And I'm trying to be more careful about
that. It's like an ego thing.
I don't know that it's so much like I have the answer and this is what you should do. For me, it comes more from this person's in pain. And I want to help them figure things out so they can get out of that situation. I mean, it comes from different things.
Right.
But not like I have the answer. I'm just trying to guide them to help them figure out the answer for them.
Right. Mm-hmm. And often, if you're going through that, you're not always open to hearing that.
For sure.
Like, I went through that this week. Like, mm-hmm. I just wanted somebody to go, oh, okay, I'm here for you. I'll talk to you later. That's all I really wanted. So it was also mm-hmm. a lesson for me to say, okay, well, I'm going to tell you stuff that I'm dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this week, but I really just want you to hear me.
That's
if you could just
perfect.
do me a favor and just let me talk, that would be great.
In the man classes, we used to call that emptying our baskets.
Emptying our baskets.
So we would set up the call with our girlfriend, like, I just need to empty my basket. Right. Can you just listen, please?
Yeah. Yeah, so that's a good lesson for me to be like, okay, this is what I really would like from you, as opposed to getting upset when they provide me something that they wanted to provide me.
Yeah, even with a man, like, let them know, like, I just need to empty my basket mm-hmm. because they're going to be sitting there the whole time trying to problem solve
right.
what they think is a problem, yeah. which may or may not be a problem. It's just, like you said, it's feelings and emotions and thoughts and just trying to sort everything out and just want to kind of say it and have it land so someone hears me and gets me. And
right. As I've talked about before, I have this special relationship with a fella, and I realized during the week when I was just wanting to vent that this special relationship is not one that I would go to talk about that. That there's certain relationships that just aren't open or conducive to that kind of conversation. And it made me a little sad when I realized it, because I thought, oh, I just really want to like express how I feel right now. And it just isn't there. And that's okay. It's a special relationship. I can't expect it to be a holy one, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's like these little realizations that happen. We have so much expectation, I think, with romantic relationships. We want that person to be everything and be the person that you can be close to and tell all your hopes and fears to. And that just isn't it. It's okay, though. Relationships are how we create them and how the person accepts it or creates them themselves. So, you know, you listen to daytime television and you're always being told what a good relationship should be. I don't know. To me, it's like a bar that nobody can reach. And it's got really nothing to do with reality either.
Mm-mm.
Not everybody can be the perfect spouse. They just can't. And they shouldn't be expected to either. Because I think you can get what you need from other relationships in your life. It is unfair to expect one person
to be
the source.
That's a heavy burden.
Right. Yeah, and we were talking about being in marriages and stuff, and if it's not working out, like how painful that could be to kind of feel stuck. But it's also unfair that both parties believe that they have to be so much to each other. I don't, maybe it's just me, but I don't think that you have to be married to your best friend. I just don't. I mean, I get it. Wouldn't that be great? But I don't, at least for me, I can't see that happening. Because what I want from a significant other isn't necessarily what I need at any given time. Sometimes I just need to talk to a girlfriend as opposed to my boyfriend or my husband or whatever, because they might not understand it. And as we were talking about earlier, men just have different ways of dealing in relationships that women do. And it's okay. It's all okay. Oh, life.
What is that? Women are from Venus, men are from Mars.
Yeah. Yeah. Isn't that interesting? What if women are from Mercury or Saturn or Jupiter?
Or we're not from anywhere. We're just...
We're from outside of time and space. We don't really exist in this whole universe thing. It's just a dream, and it's a dream construct. That's what I was having a conversation with somebody, and it's just sometimes the course just ekes out of you.
That's cool, though. I think it's subtle ways of bringing it in.
I know, but I was saying that. Like, I can't remember what we were talking about, but I was like, well, this is all just a dream, and everything's just a construct anyway. And I stopped myself like, holy crap, did I just out? I just outed myself.
I just said that out loud.
Yeah. And the person I was talking to just kind of looked at me like, I think she's insane. And then started talking about like a sitcom that they watched on TV to like get away from the concept. It's like, oh, okay, well, there you go.
That's hysterical.
I wonder if they'll remember me and my crazy talk. They probably will. Well, speaking of other planets, we're going to be on one in 2 weeks. We're going to be in San Diego at the Gary and Cindy Renard workshop. And we're hopefully going to have Mike Lemieux on our podcast. So please, listeners,
dial in.
Yes, this is going to be a good one. So Stephanie, you have anything to say upcoming for the next 2 weeks?
Just keep barbecuing your veggies.
Barbecuing your veggies. I couldn't have said that better myself. That was like really coming from God. Thank you very much, listeners. We can't wait to talk to you in 2 weeks.